Hey everybody, Shane here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight. Check them out in St. Louis, Missouri, on the hill, the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard. Online 24/7 at gaslightstl.com. You can head over there. You can check out the beautiful recording studio and book yourself a tour if you haven't been by. It's a, like I said, top-notch recording studio attached to a bar and happens to share a wall with Cha Cha Chow. So you can get yourself some delicious tacos, some cold drinks, and hang out and watch one of your favorite bands record in the studio. It's a really unique experience and something really cool for St. Louis here. So get online, follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And again, all details at gaslightstl.com. Also want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. They have a brand new location on the corner of Locust and Washington in the Zach building. You may remember that space used to be the old Plush. So head over there, check it out. They got another new location. They have a special event coming up. Splitlit Rayfield will be there doing a meet and greet signing January 13th. So mark that on your calendar. Come on over there, check out, meet Splitlit Rayfield and check out the new location. Also, head on over to musicrecordshop.com. Shop online 24/7 and pick up all your new records. New records in store every Friday. Follow them online on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Jack Grelli, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here. Rock Paper Podcast coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today. Welcoming back to the show, Jack Grelli. Welcome back, man. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
This we were kind of just catching up here off mic a little bit, talking about how it was like July of 2015 we hung out, and it was episode 89, your first appearance here. So, but since then, you got a brand new record to talk about and all kinds of stuff, so I figured it'd be cool to catch up and see what's going on. So. So yeah, man, I'm excited to get to hang out again.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for coming over.
It's the first one of 2017 now, so...
I'm honored.
Yeah. but yeah, you just had a big weekend playing with Pokey over at Delmar Hall. And with Pokey and Beth Bombara was also there. How was that? It was a good time?
It was fantastic. I was honored to be able to end the year on such a high note. The two sold out shows at a really nice brand new venue in town. It was my first time there, and everything was great. Everybody sounded great. Beth opened the first night, and David Beeman opened the second night.
Oh, okay.
And we just had a lot of fun. It was a really good way to ring out the year.
Yeah, yeah. I've become good friends with Beth, and she's a lot of fun to watch, and what her and Kit are up to, and. So if you don't know Beth Bombara, go check her out. She's got a new record coming up soon, and I think Kit's putting out a solo project as well, and so they've been hustling too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I, of course, Pokey's he's been on a roll. He's just been crushing it. So it's exciting to see people coming out of St. Louis and doing very well and making great music.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was an awesome lineup to be part of, for sure.
Yeah, that's a neat room over there, too, at Del Mar Hall. I've been twice now. It was our grand opening night for Stir, and that was a lot of fun, just to get to kind of break it in a little bit and take a walk and look around and everything. It's a beautiful room, and I really liked the way that the bar is separate from the venue in the back of the room there. And so... makes for a lot more better listening experience, I think, for fans, and you don't have to worry about any of the bar noise and stuff. So
right,
but yeah, I like you said, we got a brand new record out. Been out for a little bit.
It came out October 28th, 2016. So
yeah,
last year at this point.
Yeah, right. And then got dressed up to Be Lit Down, title of the record, and now available pretty much everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So get out there and get a hold of that. We're going to talk about some of these songs and play a couple for you if you haven't got to hear it. And let's talk about the title track, the Got Dressed Up to Be Let Down. Where's that come from?
So actually my girlfriend, Julia Van Horn, came up with the phrase and was like, hey, I got an idea for this song. Think you could write a good song, you know, based off of that. And so I chipped away at it and kind of, as I always do, kind of show her a rough draft. And she kind of gave me a thumbs up, thumbs down of where I was going with it, with the storyline. And we wanted it to be a fun, danceable song, something that was in the honky-tonk tradition, and some Cajun flair fell into it as well. But I also wanted it to be a song with like a positive message. That Got Dressed Up to Be Let Down wasn't just a classic heartbreak story of a woman getting let down by a man that we hear time and again in country music, and instead tell the story of the woman being empowered and have a bit of a feminist tone to it. And yeah, we're really happy with how it turned out, and it's just a fun song to play.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was definitely a lot more dancey, you know, for your stuff. It was a lot more upbeat kind of thing going on, but I really, it's just a fun phrase. Like, also it gets, like, it's a good hook to the song. It gets stuck in your head, and you sing along to it a lot. At least for me, I've been singing it. I listened to the record twice today, and just to kind of prepare myself for all this, and so it's definitely that catchy hook for you.
Thanks, man.
So it was really that's a fun one.
Mother always told her, when you get older, don't think you'll meet a man. Call Mr. Right, love's a hard thing. That'll only bring a real kind of pain that gets worse each time. She wasn't concerned for lessons to be learned. She wanted to live her life for all that it was worth. She didn't come from much, strength and bad luck that always wound up to be at the wrong time. Natural curly hair, no clothes she'd wear, always seemed to fit her until she met a guy who invited her out on a Friday night. Home to impress him, looking extra nice. I dressed up to be let down. The man thought was right, was nowhere to be found. Lost in a crowd, I feel like a clown. She got dressed up just to be let down. She got dressed up just to be let down. Went back to her place, took the makeup off her face, saying to herself she wouldn't do this again. Fool that she tried, believing in a lie. Still, the things like this could make a difference. She was relieved when she came to see that none of it mattered. It's all make believe. She got dressed up to be let down. The man thought was right, was nowhere to be found. Lost in a crowd, I feel like a clown. She got dressed up just to be let down. She got dressed up just to be let down. Dressed up, just to be let down.
Is that an accordion on that?
It's actually my friend Paul Weber, who played with the Hoot and Hollers for a long time. Him on playing harmonica.
Harmonica?
And him just being able to do this style of straight harp.
Okay.
That makes it sound like an accordion.
Yeah.
So he was kind of mimicking the Cajun accordion through harmonica.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys I've been trying to get a hold of. I haven't been able to talk to the Hoot and Hollers yet. That's another episode I need to make happen.
Kelly was just texting me. Her and Ryan are actually down in New Orleans on a little honeymoon vacation.
Oh, very cool.
I might have to wait till they get back.
Yeah, sure. So that's it's a great. Where do you record this record at?
So I recorded this one with Ben Hinn at Mound Sound Studios, which was in the Loop underneath Go Music, and he's moved the studio since then. But it was a really fun process, and Ben was really great to work with, really patient, because we took our time on this one. Every other record I've done, for the most part, would go in and get the bulk of it done in 2 or 3 days, and then maybe do some overdubs here and there. But this one, we just kind of took our time throughout a year. Oh, hey, Mike. We're on Rock Paper Podcast. If you want to say hi, my roommate Mike Dorsey.
How you doing?
This is Shane Presley. So you're not going to say a little something to the camera?
No.
All right. Mike Dorsey, everybody. I gave him a heads up we'd be doing this, so I had to. Anyways. It was a really neat process, and we recorded probably about 85% of it all analog to 2-inch tape. And the tape machine it's real old and was on and off having issues, and eventually the tape snapped. And Ben was able to salvage it and tape it together, and the song still was fine at that spot. But after that, he was kind of like, hey, do you think we could finish it on Pro Tools or a computer program?
Right.
You know, we're like so close. And so that was a new process for us too, recording to tape. And
yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that I've heard a lot of, especially... enthusiast of for vinyl and things and of old country sound like that, like they're putting it to tape and then pressing it to vinyl records and things, and it's just like it's such a warm tone to those records, and it's cool that to hear like your stories and people that are keeping it alive still, that old process of making music and stuff compared to, like I said, everything being digital and things now.
Sure.
It's pretty wild. I think Al Holiday, I'm pretty sure he cut his record to tape and then had it pressed to vinyl. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Al's an old buddy of mine.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I'm pretty sure that's the story. But yeah, anyway, like I said, I appreciate that as a music fan. I appreciate people, like I said, keeping those old traditions alive still. And
absolutely. Some people are very... very strict with that and like are all about it and like mix it analog, master it so, and send it off to get pressed that it never even goes digital until they put it on iTunes or if they press a CD. And
yeah,
I'm not quite like that, there is something to be said for some modern technology that makes things easier. And
but it
was a really fun process, and I'd like to continue working that way for sure.
Yeah. Is this one also available on vinyl?
Yep. Yeah, I own Big Money Records, and I got vinyl and CD.
Yeah, very cool. I know I bought the last one from you on vinyl, so I'll have to get a hold of this one as well.
Cool.
Keep adding in my collection.
Sounds good.
Collect them all. You brought along a couple of friends, feature on this record in South City 3. Played some instrumentation on the record with you. They played on Wind to Run and Hilltop of Sand, is that right?
They did. And then Joey Glenn actually played bass on also a song called Birthday Cards. And then Ryan Koenig is singing the backup vocals and playing the fiddle on Got Dressed Up to Be Let Down.
Okay.
And I believe Ryan also played on at least one other tune. New Mexico, he played harmonica and sang backups as well. So, yeah, it was very, very much a community collaborative effort.
Mm-hmm.
I brought in a lot of different people, a lot of friends. And, yeah, it was just really great that there's just... so many amazing musicians here in South City or in St. Louis. And so I was kind of calling up all kinds of people. So John Horton, from the Bottle Rockets and from Colonel Ford, played baritone guitar on one tune, and Matt Wilson from the Rum Drum Ramblers, Loot Rock, played on a few. Justin Brown from Doc Ellis Band, and Marianne Schulte played accordion. She's in the Sydney Street Shakers. The list was huge when we were putting in all the liner notes. It was like, oh man, yeah, we got a lot of people on this thing.
Definitely, yeah, that sounds great. I love hearing that, you know, like you're saying, all these St. Louis artists represented on this and keeping it all in the family, you know, the community here and stuff, and that's really neat. What about that Wind to Run? That's another one of my favorites. I really enjoy the lyrics to it. Talking about the can't fry bacon and gotta crack a few eggs. Is there any particular story behind?
There is. Yeah. So that one is one of the few songs that I've written in this batch of tunes that I sat down and wrote it all in one sitting. And I've sat down and wrote it all with a pen and paper, like, and put it to music at a different date. But pretty much I had an old van that needed to pass inspection, and it failed the first time around because the windshield was cracked, which shouldn't have been a big deal, but the body of the van was so rusted that the body around the windshield was cracked real bad. And the mechanic said, hey, if you take out this windshield to put another one, that crack's going to expand, and basically it's just going to cost so much to do all this body work. He's like, I don't know if it's worth it, bud. And I left all, you know, pissed off and kind of freaking out, being like, there's no way my van's totaled because of cracked windshield. Like, right. That's insane. So long story short, I got some tips of maybe some ways of cutting corners of the legal system of passing inspection. And that didn't work. So then after that morning, I'd gotten up real early to try to do that, and went back to my place, and I don't think I'd eaten anything, and probably had too much coffee, and just crashed really hard, and kind of was just like, felt like the world was crashing down on me because I might have to buy a new van, and I didn't have any money, and I think we had a tour coming up, and it was just like, what am I going to do? And so I had some eggs and bacon, so I made eggs and bacon, and I remember Ryan always told me, you know, you can't cook bacon on high heat. You got to just like a little bit of he's a breakfast guy. Just, you know, a little bit of heat and let that grease boil, you know, take your time on it. And so I was making that, and which is kind of like thinking about that and like equating it to my music career, or my life, and just kind of sat down and kind of just cranked out that song. And so it was a reflection on the van, but also just kind of a reflection on the past probably like 6 years of my life and kind of how I've been going about it and kind of questioning it all, learning from my mistakes, trying to be accountable for, you know, any mistakes of just, you know, any shortcomings is due to me. I can't just sit here and just be like, you know, well, this didn't happen because I didn't, so-and-so didn't allow me to have this opportunity or whatever. Right. It's all on me and my own work ethic. And I cranked out this kind of lighthearted song that I guess has some silly morals to it and stuff too.
Right.
After years of persistence, I'm back where it started. Running in circles when I should have been darting straight toward the stars. Let's start hard when you're naive and you have a clean heart. Well, I wore it on my sleeve so everyone could see. Between you and me, it ain't that clean. Always quick to leave dirty dishes in the sink. After cooking breakfast, but always said thanks. Can't fry bacon on high heat. Gotta take your time and pull up the grease. Gotta crack a few eggs to get things done. Flip them at the right time. Want them to run. Belly half full, get behind the wheel. Once led by my thumb, now the weight of my heel. To the next city, hear what's pretty. Show me a good time, but never have a fool to give me. Doesn't fully understand what happened overnight. Sure, bummed around, but never long time. And time takes a toll and everything gets old. Look at these tires and this cracked windshield. Can't go for miles on highways and streets. You gotta take your time or else you overheat. You gotta change oil to get things done. Put money in the old rig if you want her to run. But to stay on the run, you gotta pay a few dues. A tooth that aches, you bite more than you can chew. Swallowing your pride could keep you alive, but there's certain few who'll never apologize. Just to say you're sorry can go a long ways. Look where all my heels have earned from my mistakes. A few wrong turns, smell the rubber as it burns. Get dirty in your heart, brown any shirt. Can't wash your clothes back to conscience to be clean. You gotta take your time reflecting your defeat. You gotta change your methods, get things done. Deliver at the right time, know when to run.
I never would have guessed that frying bacon was going to be a metaphor for life. But, yeah, it works, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, man, another great song. And also, like I said, Hilltop of Sand was another fun one featuring the South City 3. And it just, it's a couple of these are a little more kind of stripped down, just kind of you and guitar kind of feel to them. And stuff, but then like it's fun to hear more of that full sound with having a lot more of the instrumentation on there and with those guys. So that's I like that. I like the whole thing. I like that the record has those highs and lows and stuff. It goes has some dynamic to it like that. And
thanks.
Yeah, sounded great. So we got like I said, the Hilltop of Sand. You want anything behind that track?
Yeah, so that one is. Probably 75% truth and then 25% fiction, maybe, which is often how I'll write songs or something and take a true story and then realize that you need to exaggerate or put some fiction or drama in there to make it more interesting for a song. But so me and Julia went to South America, I guess it was this time 2 years ago now, and we were in Colombia. And we went to a little town called Punta Gallinas that was the most northern tip of South America. And it was this desert region right on the Caribbean Sea. And it was like really hard to get to. It wasn't well traveled. A lot of the tourism and traveling in Colombia and a lot of parts of that world is in the earlier stages and stuff. So it's just a lot of backpackers. It's not like Europe that these paths are set and it's like real simple. So anyways, we had this journey to get to this little town that wasn't even really a town. It was like a village. And so we like rode in the back of a truck and all this stuff. And it got to this point with all these massive sand dunes. And we climbed up this massive sand dune that was like, seemed like it was like a half mile high. And we got to the top of it and then you could see the Caribbean Sea. And it literally just, the sand dune went straight down into the ocean and the waves were just crashing, and it was just this surreal place in the world that was so remote and was such a journey to get there, and it was really rewarding. And so then we all swam, and you had to like climb all the way up back to the top of it, and you could kind of jump down the sand dune and you could just kind of soar in the air, and you're just landing in just clean sand, so like it didn't hurt the pressure on your legs. And so anyways the song is using that imagery a bit of that specific spot, but also combining other parts of our travels in Colombia, specifically on a boat that we took to a little town called Arusi on the Pacific coast. And that was a journey of getting on a freight boat and having to stay on the boat overnight and this sketchy docks and then waking up to literally being where the northern and southern hemispheres meet, and you could see the stars from both, and you could see the Southern Cross, and you could see the Big Dipper, and it was just really incredible. So there's a lot of the imagery is truth, and the fiction is Julia had to go back home for work, and just the way that it all worked out, I stayed behind about another 2 weeks, and I went down to Ecuador, and so in the song I make it like it's a heartbreak song, but that's not actually what happened. So that was just a unique, really powerful and beautiful experience, those travels, and figured put it in a song somehow.
She told me this was her paradise. It's pretty damn hard to disagree. A few days passed, that old wooden boat, something that talked about for years. She woke me in the middle of the night, shoving the stars in both atmosphere. In a land where they spoke a love and tongue, they've tried so hard to understand. Each other we could only talk lightly at the bottom of that hilltop. Carnival's over, music seemed to die. Words spoke to each other, didn't feel as alive. As we stretched ourselves thin, the world was calling her home. I went on to follow those mountains, found myself tired, too far gone. In a land where they spoke of love and time, they've tried so hard to understand. Each other we only talk lightly at the bottom of that hilltop in the sand. At the bottom of that hilltop in the sand.
Yeah, man, that sounds great. I've never been able to travel much. I've done a couple, you know, everything inside the states to, you know, Chicago and Florida and Nashville and a couple of spots, but I have never been to the coast or so. But traveling South America, and then I know you've done a bunch of European stuff too, and. But that's got to be just a trip that music's taken you all over the world too and stuff. And
It's incredible. It's hard to swallow sometimes and sit back and realize, like, when I went to Europe last year, I was there for 2 months, and it's about 40 shows in 13 different countries, and it was just crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. And it all happened so fast. Of like, once I was there, it was like 6 months of emails to make it happen,
right?
And once I was there, we were just going and going and going, and it was just incredible. The people were all so great, the food, and the shows are great. And and then all of a sudden I'm back. Yeah. It's just amazing. You had to sit back and realize the opportunities I've been given, and very grateful for them. And if you would have told me that, you know, 5 years ago or something, I never would have been like, no
right.
way.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
So, I take it one song, one show, one tour at a time. And
yeah.
So actually, all this morning was sending emails and stuff, going back over to Europe this spring, and so
okay.
really trying to nail down all the details this month while I'm off work or off the road.
Yeah, man, that's exciting stuff. I mean, like I said, I would love to do some of that. Maybe one of these days I'll be able to get over there and take in all the sights and stuff and get some culture. And
yeah, plane tickets are cheap right now.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, even that, I still haven't. $0, so
sure.
I don't even have a passport, man. Like I said, I've never really done anything out of the country. I gotta go do that, but one of these days I'll get there and go check it all out. Another thing I've been wanting to talk to you about, because I found it interesting, but I don't really know a whole lot about it, but I know you're part of the St. Louis chapter, I guess, of it, is with that Lavender Country. I know I know a little bit of that, but I was hoping maybe you'd help shine some light on what you've been doing with that too.
Sure. So Lavender Country is the first openly gay country record from 1973. Patrick Haggerty was the songwriter and the leader of the band. They made 1,000 records in 73, released them through, it was funded through like a gay community organization in Seattle, and they released them all themselves, sold them through underground gay magazines. So a lot of them were people that probably were hiding this record. This was a time where gay people were completely oppressed, and most people weren't really out of the closet publicly. And so they released 1,000 records. They played, you know, a bunch of like benefit shows and gay pride events. And after about 2 years, the band kind of fizzled out. They weren't really accepted anywhere besides within their own community, and the records were gone, so they moved on. A few years ago, a guy in Chicago found the record, and it got reissued by Paradise of Bachelors. And so fast-forwarding, so that's Lavender Country. Ryan Koenig found the record at Hit Street Records in Columbia, Missouri, and came back to town, as he always does, with a huge stack of records, and was like, hey, man, got the first openly gay country record. You got to hear this. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And showed it to me, and of course I loved it. Well, then Julia found it on her own and gifted it to me as a present, and that's when I really fell in love with it and realized the depth of it, because Patrick went on to be a lifelong activist, was involved in politics, social work, and just a true revolutionary as far as his life and everything he's done. And once I got my own copy of the record, there's an amazing zine inside telling his story, specifically like stories of his relationship with his father, which was, it's just really emotional and really beautiful. He had an actually incredible relationship with his father. And the record is also highly political, and it's just like, it's such a strong gay pride album. But it's also really emotional, like country music is, of him telling personal stories of heartbreak, of trying to fall in love with someone that's in the closet, and all kinds of situations that me as a straight white man in 2017, I could never comprehend.
Right.
So anyways, fast forwarding, there's a short documentary made called These Cocksucking Tears, which is one of the songs off the record, and the documentary has been going to all these film festivals and winning the best short at like tons. Seattle Film Festival, the South by Southwest. And it was being shown at the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri, which I've played at a lot, playing again this March. And Julia saw I was going to be there. And she was like, we got to go see this film. And I was like, okay, yeah, it sounds good. And I was kind of hesitant, I'll be honest, just because I was just gotten off the road and was tired. And that's a big party week and, right. In Colombia. And then she found out he was going to be there. And I was like, all right, we'll go. So we went there on a mission to meet Patrick Haggerty.
Yeah.
And we get there the first night. We go to a show. And we see a couple cowboy hats. And we're like, is that him? No, it's not him. And we go to this after party. And it's like 1 in the morning. Patrick's now 73. So I didn't really expect to see him at this after party. And literally there, I'm at the bar getting my first drink, and he walks right past me, and I turn to Julia, I go, there's Patrick Haggerty. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, definitely. And I just run up to him, and I'm like, hey, you're Patrick, right? And he's like, yeah. And I just was like, thank you for your beautiful music. You know, thanks for being here. You know, and it's an honor to meet you, you know, and introduce myself. And he was just, I mean, he is just an incredible person. And I just right away was like, what would it take to get you to play in St. Louis? He's like, well, I'd need a band. And I was like, I could do that. And then he was like, I'd need a plane ticket and a place to stay. And I was like, no problem. And so we saw each other throughout the weekend, exchanged emails. I emailed him that Monday when I got home. I didn't expect to hear from him for at least a week. You know, I figured, oh, man, this guy's probably worn out from this week.
Right.
He's probably back in Washington just relaxing. Well, I hear back from him in like 2 hours. And he's like, yeah, I'm as serious as you are. Let's pick a date. And he starts telling me his availabilities. And shoot, I think within a week, we had the date booked at Off-Broadway. And I was putting together a band. And so I didn't want it to be my band. At this point of the lineup, we were a bunch of straight white men. And this just didn't seem right. It's such a, the album and the music has always been such a community effort. And so Julia helped me as well put the band together. So it was a variety of people from the St. Louis music community. And before I knew it, it was this 8-piece band. And so we were going to do this big show. And once it was announced, Bloomington, Indiana, Louisville, Kentucky, Columbia, Missouri, all started contacting Patrick. Well, how can will you guys play here too? And so all of a sudden we had a tour booked. And Patrick's 73. He's never had a career in music. He's never been on tour before. And this was his first tour as far as a different city every night.
That's crazy.
And it was just incredible. And the music is so powerful and beautiful and important. And the shows, about half of the show is him just telling stories and dialogue. And it's really emotional, but also really uplifting. And so it was great. And since then, we went and played the Maximum Ames Festival with them in Iowa, played a different Iowa show. He came back to St. Louis, played the St. Louis International Film Festival. And now we're going to play the Westport Roots Festival in Kansas City at the end of May. And so it's like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And I call it the St. Louis chapter or the Missouri chapter of Lavender Country, because now he has a Portland band. He already has his... He lives in Bremerton, Washington, outside of Seattle. Has his band there. He has an L.A. band, and he has an Nashville band. And so we're just one of many bands.
Right.
I guess we're playing the shows in the middle of the country. And yeah, him and his husband, JB, are just incredible. And so they've stayed here now twice for over a week each time. And we just consider them family now. And
yeah.
It's just incredible that from when we found that record and how cool we thought it was, and then realizing how important the record was, and now he's somebody that like I talk to on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah. So both you and Ryan own original pressings of
No.
Just the reprints?
Just the repress,
okay.
Which they're on. They just issued their second press of the repress, so the third press of that album in its lifetime, which I was explaining to Patrick how big of a deal that is,
yeah.
You know, and how cool that is. And
I was gonna say that'd be really crazy if you know 1,000 printed and 2 of them are here. But
right, no, it was the repress,
yeah.
And you can find that record at a lot of record stores now.
Yeah.
But it's funny. So a friend of mine, Corey Cockterell, who's a musician, from Missouri, lived in Austin, now in Louisville. So he got to go to the Louisville show. He, when I posted online about Lavender Country, and it might have even been before I even met Patrick, Corey emails me and he's like, "No way." He goes, "I used to DJ at KOPN in Columbia, Missouri in the 90s when I was just a teenager, and I had a metal show, and they had a copy of the vinyl in their library." And he's like, "And I would play the songs back then, like thinking it was kind of funny." And he's like, "I forgot about it, and it always felt like a dream." And he's like, "Now this thing is real." And like, yeah. he was just like beside himself. And then he got to meet Patrick, and just crazy how the world works, you know? And
yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, that's really cool that you know, made all happen, kind of bringing it to St. Louis here and introducing it to a new group of people and stuff. It's gotta be pretty surreal to kind of, like you're saying, now that you guys are good friends and everything else, and it's a really cool moment for. I know I've been fortunate enough to, call a lot of these guys friends now, and that have become. I was started as a fan, you know, even like guys locally like Steve Ewing and The Urge. You know, I grew up big fans of those guys, and now they're buddies, and it's like it's a weird thing, man. But right. You know, that I can get to hang with those guys on, you know, and stuff. And but yeah, I mean, so that's I kind of relate to what you went through there, and it's just like it's a really a neat feeling to call them friends now. And so yeah, that's cool. So yeah, if you haven't checked out Lavender Country, there it is. Check it out. Like I said, available a lot of record stores and online.
And the film is. Think it still is up on Vimeo now. These Cocksucking Tears, and Patrick Haggerty, Lavender Country, and get hip to it. It's important.
So you think what do you think's next for that? I mean, you said you were playing another festival in what, May?
Yeah, end of May at the Westport Roots Festival, which is gonna be Mo Bandy's the headliner, and Dale Watson's playing, James Hand. There's some pretty great names on that. And then that Patrick's, he just played another Portland show. He's just getting kind of people inviting him. He really wants to get over to Europe, which would be awesome. But he's just kind of taking it one opportunity at a time. And,
sure,
you know, him and JB are retired and just relaxing up in a beautiful state of Washington. Yeah. So
kind of reminds me of Charles Bradley a little bit, like just the fact that like having success. You know, very late, and he has another incredible story about being discovered, I guess, and started putting out original music and stuff. I can't imagine, you know, being in your 70s and finally getting your big break, kind of thing. You know, like that's pretty wild.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know there's, I mean, there's a ton of those stories. You look at, you watch like any of those shows, like. The Voice or whatever, like there's people come out, this is their very first time like taking a shot, trying to break out of just playing in the basement or whatever kind of thing, and then you realize that they're fantastic, and they just whatever it might have been that kept them from performing, you know, different just self-doubt or whatever and stuff, but they finally take a chance, and it's like, so I don't know, there's a lot of those stories, but anyway, it's cool to see that they're finally getting some recognition for what was deserved and things, and
absolutely,
and the time's finally coming around to where it's accepted and stuff, and
yeah,
especially in comedy, it just seems like, especially in the 70s and in kind of honky tonk country stuff, like I don't think especially then, I don't think it was probably really really tough, but like I said, now, you know, 2017, a whole lot's changed since then, so.
Lots changed, but it's still there's still a struggle and still a battle.
Yeah. Right,
and he said himself, it's political of why maybe the film's doing so well.
Yeah,
because these issues are resurfacing, especially with trans issues and everything North Carolina with the bathrooms and stuff. Yeah. So his label's based out of North Carolina, so he went and played a big festival out there, and Yeah, so it's really important and still is very topical. The songs are, and it's a special thing.
Yeah. Well, you have a I forget the name now, but you have one on your record that's awfully quite a political message behind it too. Which one was that?
Changes Never Made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was, it's probably the most I can recall of having a lot of strong political message in your songs. Is that based on some of the recent events around here and stuff, or do you have other stories that you pulled from?
So no, that one is, that song's about the killing of Mike Brown in Ferguson, and you know, that what happened there and the way that the community responded wasn't just based off of one event. It was something that had clearly been building, the type of response. You know, clearly people were upset and had been upset. And as a songwriter, but especially as a white man, I really wanted to be careful while writing that song. I didn't want to claim to have the answers. I didn't want to be preachy. And so it took a while to figure out the words to sing about that and how to address that as a white man. And actually, I was listening to so much Lavender Country at the time, which is well before I met Patrick. That record actually really influenced this new record of mine. And I was just listening to that and a few other things, and actually most of that song kind of came at one time after probably a few months of like trying to find some angle. And it kind of was from a bit of my experience almost with it, in a way. It starts out of how I heard about it. We was actually at South Broadway Athletic Club, and my friend Charlie came in and said, "Hey, you know, cops just killed this unarmed black kid up in Ferguson, and you know, people are out in the streets." And I was like, "Oh wow, okay, yeah. Unfortunately, cops kill unarmed black kids a lot. People are responding. Wow, okay." And then as the media and as events unfolded, how the story changed, how it came to fruition, and how it just really seemed intentional, just divided the American population. And it's something that it has set a precedent. Now we see all across the country, anytime there's a police shooting, people respond. And people are getting organized and trying to find solutions to fix this problem, which it might not be that simple. And I just wanted to address the song. We live in a time that the political climate is so insane, especially mm-hmm. in these next coming weeks for the next 4 years, that I feel as an artist a responsibility to be addressing it and talking about it. Again, I don't want to be preaching or claim to have answers when I do, but I feel like it's important to sing about the times that we live in. Nina Simone has a famous quote about that, and it's a folk tradition too. And
right.
So I kind of wanted to take the Woody Guthrie approach. Woody Guthrie would just like tell these stories of the people's struggles of unions or, you know, protests and stuff. And he would just sing about it kind of matter of factly. And that's what I tried to do. And, I'm always moved by, either socially conscious or outright political music. And it's a tough thing to do, and you get mixed responses, and that's okay. But I just feel like it's important to be saying at least something. And after being part of Lavender Country, it's really shown mm-hmm. how important and how beneficial that can be for certain people, even though it might turn away other people. The right. people that are into it might really take something from it. And sure.
On a Saturday night, Charlie came in and said there was a fight. He wasn't sure who heard it right. Said everyone was choosing a side. rehearse. The actors all performing, showing their worth. Blanket in the street for over 4 hours, the sun and the heat. Cops and reporters begging people to repeat how many of us created, set up for defeat. And an image of a mother screaming in tears next to broken windows, instilling all the fears. Folks said it felt like we'd gone back 50 years. However, it was happening. Trigger wiped his hands clean. Community served well, it split at the seams. The rest of the world shocked at disbelief. Police were still killing black men in the street. But as more news came out, opinions changed. The man who died, they destroyed his name. Cop who killed, no, he ain't to blame. The boy lost his life at the age of 18.
I think there's something to, I think people kind of look to artists sometimes to, you know, for those songs or for, you know, sometimes it's tough to, you know, get hit with the truth like that. But then sometimes, like you're saying, some people draw to it, some people get turned away. But I know, I mean, I love a lot of those political messages and songs and stuff. And, you know, even you know, Dylan and stuff singing Times Are Changing.
Right.
Stuff like that. So it's like there's a lot of these songs like that that are, and you, like I said, they still hold up today because of the messages are still current and relevant.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I there's a guy, Will Hogue, I'm a big fan of, and he's got a song, Times Aren't a Changing, and it's and so it's kind of the same thing about how we keep kind of. A lot of history is repeating itself and things, and
right.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, we've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. And for you know, as in my opinion, like I said, there's I just think, but I like I said, I enjoy that people are singing about it, keeping these issues and relevant and current and stuff, and not just kind of sweeping it under the mat or whatever, and you know, talk about it and make them known and heard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. So so again, that's also on Jack's latest record, Got Dressed Up to Be Lit Down, available everywhere. Physical copies around town, any of the stores yet?
Yeah. It's definitely some vintage vinyl. I'm trying to think where else it might be. Actually, the Big Money's kind of more in charge of that. So. All right.
But yeah, get on there. Like I said, you can order online and things. And you can follow Jack on Facebook and keep up with more tour dates being announced soon and stuff. So when he's coming around to your neighborhood. But yeah, man, I really appreciate you taking some time out to hang again and catch up.
Likewise. Thanks for making the trek down to my neighborhood. Yeah. And, chatting with me. First one in 2017. I'm honored.
Yeah, man. Very exciting stuff. So, yeah, like I said, great record. And I appreciate what you're doing. And like I said, it's I'm excited for some more new tunes coming soon, and hopefully and keeping the hits coming.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for having me.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.